Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Hello.
It's Tuesday with our admirable friends. Good evening, everybody.
Happy Tuesday.
And we got Alex back tonight.
We do.
Wow. This is
live in our studio.
Yes. He's in the studio tonight.
Glad to be back.
I was,
I got a fit of giggles before we were, like, right, ready to come on, and it was just, that's still kind of awkward, because you know she's almost ready to finish her intro, you know, saying that, and then you get kind of giggling, and you get to kind of stop.
Well, you wonder whether the audience heard that other audio that stream that went through
that
before
funny.
She came on.
Yeah,
that was funny.
And then I started
crying.
Sounded
like another show.
we're taking this show a new direction, a heavy rock intro.
Shaking it.
Hey, let's tonight we're going to be talking about discernment.
Yes.
Which is really the one way to think about discernment is the power of choice, making choices, using our wisdom faculty to make choices, to discern. Right.
You would have to use a little bit of wisdom to make a good choice.
Yeah.
Something skillful.
And. Well, you're loaded with the buzzwords tonight.
Yeah, you like it?
And we got the...
Are you making fun of me? Are you two going to beat up on me tonight? I see where this is going.
But a little bit of house cleaning. It's a good topic tonight because it's around choice and there's so much to discuss. So anyone that is listening tonight and wants to call in, we'd love to hear from you. Because we'll take a call on choice. You know, any decision you make and whether you want some advice on the decision itself or the way you're approaching the decision. We've got three ready, able, and willing.
I defer to you, too. I don't really feel like... I don't like giving advice.
Well, what do you think the show is?
I know, but I let you, too, because I just...
And then also we've got on the chat line at bbsradio.com/admirablefriends. Live chat. Again, any questions you have regarding discernment, making choices?
Or after the fact, admirablefriends.org.
Yes. So in regards to the actual questions we framed, the question is discernment, how do we build it? In particular, how do we develop it? How do we develop this capacity to make better choices? How do we have a daily practice of building discernment? So how would you build discernment with intention? In other words, not just going out during your day and making choices, but how would you increase that capacity to make better choices? And then lastly, what benefit do you or would you receive from such a regular practice? So those are the questions that frame the show. But let's start with our gratitudes before we get going.
All right.
Who wants to start?
I'll start.
Okay,
so I'm grateful that our son and daughter-in-law, Aaron and Taylor, took us out to lunch today. They took time out of their day, and we went out for lunch. And I thought that was really nice because you always, or I seem to notice because I know how busy people are, but when they can do it together and the four of us can take that time and enjoy each other's company and even if it was just an lunch hour, it was it was really a nice thing. I was grateful that they invited us out and we could all make it, and we had a lovely time.
Nice. Alex?
So much to be grateful for. Where do I start? No, really. You know, family is one that's always good to be grateful for, and one that has been coming around more often. So I'm always grateful for family I have around me, to be that support vehicle or to kind of help pick you up when you get down. You know, I'm grateful today, as I've been thinking about it, and it kind of comes as I've been looking at headlines, and I'm not a big news guy or get really inundated with TV programs or anything like that. But once in a while, I do like to stop and reflect on the country we live in. And, you know, I heard someone say once, you know, you don't ever really say how much you love your country until you go and you live in another one. And then you say, wow, we really did have it good there. And so I'm very grateful for a lot of the actions that a lot of people have contributed to putting, and while we're not perfect by any means, we've got a lot of, you know, a lot of hurdles to climb from a society when it comes to, you know, poverty and education and things like that, and we'll continue to go down that. But, you know, sometimes you do have to be grateful for the way things are, and there are a lot of other areas where it's very hard to live a certain way. And so, just reflecting on that, very grateful for those who have come before us and have kind of helped move our American culture forward and continuing to progress in all those different ways. So I know it's kind of a 30,000 foot gratitude, but
there's a lot of you know, I get a kick out of when politicians try to point fingers and say that this group is more entitled to another. I mean, every one of us is entitled to government benefits. We're receiving entitlements every day from living in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're entitled to the roads and streets, the internet access, lots of what you would consider community type services that are available to us that we just take for granted. There's a degree of entitlement in everything, to your point, Alex.
Yeah, and I think we all, you know, it's very easy to get carried away with, you know, our own world, and not think of ourselves in this greater society, greater culture that we're in, and we become hypersensitive to all sorts of issues, you know, there are people that are doing things that we may not see or hear about as often, but there's a lot of people out there doing a lot of things that are contributing. And while things aren't perfect, there are a lot of good things to be reflecting on. And like I said, if you're not appreciative of it, go step outside those boundary lines and go put yourself in an environment that those sorts of things aren't a part of.
Right.
And you'll see very quickly how grateful you are.
But even if you have to, without even comparing them, just look at what you're receiving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you're receiving as a human being, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being part here compared to being on an island all by yourself. You know, what is being provided for you here?
Yeah.
Your transportation, food, the highways.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a whole lot.
Well, it's not a perfect system. It still is. It's a pretty darn good system.
It is a culture that we shouldn't run away from, much like you heard me say, you don't run away from your religion, you shouldn't.
Yeah, and that's really it. Yeah, it's a bit of acceptance, and I know it kind of looks on the positive side, but if you can't embrace some of those positive aspects, I think you just become, you know, digging a very deep and dark hole, which doesn't do anybody any good. So,
well,
I'll tell you what.
Something that you can build on, too, personally, you know, whether it's volunteerism or something like that, just pick up a little, I mean, you don't have to save the whales, but you could certainly, you know.
But one thing is clear, I think his gratitude clearly states that he's not listening to the news, because that level of gratitude would never come across the news. It's just the opposite. What we're not getting, you know, everything is incomplete if you actually listen to the news. Even if they're talking about a foreign policy and what's happening over there, he could be doing it better. The president could be doing it better. We could be doing it. Everything is always, the glass is half empty. It's very rarely half full.
You know, and it's a good, it's, you know, tonight's discernment kind of goes into that too, kind of drilling down and looking at the aggregate of things, you know, not just taking surface values. No, you can make, you know, sweeping generalizations about where we are from whatever your perspective is. But when you drill down and look at a lot of the events taking place, there are some good things happening there.
Well, you can take any issue and there's a half glass, half empty, and it's half full.
There's always something.
Yeah.
And, but I'm saying the news inundates us with half empty. It's the negative
side. Yeah, you know, I just seen it. It seemed like somebody was at the stake every day. There was a new face, a new person, a new story. And it doesn't matter on what side or this side or who you are or whatever. It was like, who's up next? Who's going to
Brian Williams? He's now on the plane. So he's got to go, you know.
I know. And it's just, take him down. And it's just we, it seems like we just, yeah, we somehow if we divert that energy towards somebody else's misery, we're kind of lifted up a
little
bit.
Well, it was a LinkedIn discussion, and somebody wrote a long article about the Brian Williams thing. And without speaking to judgment as to what he did was right or wrong, he said there's a part of us that are all like Brian Williams, that embellish stories of the past.
Absolutely.
And tend to magnify it. And that's all he had to do was say that. And he had five people coming at him basically saying, I'm not like Brian Williams. I don't lie. And it's like, whoa. You know,
yeah.
You don't really understand your true experience, because every one of us recollect a story in the past and we put a little spin on it. And if we don't think we do, then we're not discerning the truth. Okay? We don't, first of all, it's impossible to recall all of our history exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think we're going to cut ourselves and our egos down with less of a history? No, we tend to embellish on it.
Yeah, our minds do crazy things subconsciously, consciously. I mean, things get twisted and distorted all the time.
Well, it's always us in the middle of the discussion.
Right.
So if you got hit by a car, everybody in an accident say, it was definitely my fault?
Right.
That's a rare occasion. I got hit today.
Right.
So, you know, you're already, your perspective is, it's the world against me. And then your memory is not acute as you think it is. So you are distorting the past. That doesn't make what Brian Williams is right. They missed the whole point of the article. This guy wrote a great article as to how we can reflect on this. And it was a way to tolerate and understand. It was very insightful. And it had lots of discernment on it.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I don't think we give ourselves, in our current culture, I don't think we give ourselves enough credit for how far we've come. We're still very young when it comes to a nation, a culture, and kind of where we're going. So a lot of the hurdles we're hitting now and a lot of the things we're taking on, as a society, you know, other societies have gone through cycles of dealing with these sorts of issues and dealing with these types of, dilemmas within their own boundaries. And so they've had time to go over them, had time to discern what are the right choices to make and go over. And so, I just think a lot of times when you're at the top of your game, you don't really, as a country, as at the top of our game, can sit back and say what we are doing right versus, you know, all the wrong things we're doing and how to fix them.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Social media has certainly nipped this in the bud real quick. Anybody that's on a public forum and embellishing. Before it used to be, before social media, before television became a 24-hour news cycle thing, it used to be like you're a legend, you know, it would be like the game telephone. You know, somebody would tell somebody else and, you know, or if you embellished, it would be like the fishtail. You know, I once caught a fish this big.
That's another use of discernment, to bring it back to the topic of the show, that you're not discerning that your words, anything electronic, is out there. Whether it's a Facebook post or whatever, it's out there. So you better discern before you, what I say is hit pause before send, and just recollect and say, this is going out to the world. Is this something I'm prepared to
live by? Well, I was just telling you about that girl. She was a high school girl. This was in the media, and she tweeted, she got a job at a pizza place, and she put on her tweet that she was very disparaging to the job. She hadn't even started yet. You know, she was like, sounded like she was forced into it, and she was really just it was terrible what she put on the tweet. Well, lo and behold, wouldn't you know that the manager of the pizza place that gave her the job the previous day saw the tweet. He retweeted her back to her and said, you no longer have a job.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Can you imagine? But I did hear once somebody said that you shouldn't post anything that you wouldn't want to see on a billboard. I thought that was a really good. And I have to applaud some of these teachers now that I see them on Facebook saying, you know, please share this with your Facebook because I want to illustrate to my students how quickly something can be shared and to go around. So she's at least trying. I know you can't hold somebody's hand and discern for them, but certainly you can teach them how to maybe pause. Like
my gratitudes, just quickly, I sat back, you know, as we're moving this weekend to Austin, and I sat back and thought about while we were here in Dallas and Fort Worth, in particular the last year, and I'm grateful for our three sons, Carol and I, that they were able to discern through their lives and through their families that we had no accidents over the last year of any kind at all. We've lived essentially stress-free from, you know, any severe accidents, a car accident, something happening personally, you know? I mean, you take this for granted, but remember when Zoe, you know, had her teeth knocked out and, you know, we had nothing in the last year. Everybody was safe, which basically meant that some good choices were being made, some discernment was being used by the boys as they're adults. And, you know, I think we take things for granted, and it was just, that just came to me. It's like, wow, everybody's been safe this year. No illness, no other. It's like Thich Nhat Hanh wrote about, he said, when you wake up in the morning, you should be grateful that you don't have a toothache. And it's like, you don't have a toothache today.
No.
You're doing all right.
You are doing all right.
You know, it's kind of like what I was saying. You know, it's like, you know, you can definitely complain about the small events that are happening on day to day, but when you step back and look at the grand in like a year's scape and look at...
Well, let's start by one
very
above,
meaningful...
You're above the ground versus below the ground.
Yeah.
So there's something to be grateful for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then there's a whole bunch of other things that you can enjoy. So gratitudes are always good because they get us looking to the other side of the half full. And hopefully learning from other people's actions, because, again, that whole concept of admirable friendship, it's so helpful to have others that are swinging at it positively, because any one of us gets down at any given point. It's good to be around people.
Well, I think I told you, the power of gratitudes, you know, if someone's new to listening to what gratitudes are, this is a kind of a... Gratitudes are really sweeping across the nation.
Yeah.
And I told you it was, I think you and I discussed this, even though it's a little bit after Super Bowl. One of the coordinators for the Seahawks took the head job at the Atlanta Falcons. And he was being interviewed, and the interviewer had asked the coach, okay, so now you finally got the big job. You're the head honcho, new organization, into a fantastic facility. They got your big office right down there. You're going in, you got the big boy desk, the big leather chair, you go and you sit in it. What is the very first thing you do? And the guy, without even hesitating, said, I go through my gratefuls and I thank those who helped me get here and everything it took to get right there. And I would call that individual a successful person because of the dedication, determination it took to accomplish where he is right now and the position he's at. And for him to go right to that, I think speaks very loudly to the power of what gratitudes are and where it can be taken.
Well, if you're right, Alex, and I hope you are, that there's a shift. And I was talking to a 30-year-old from Australia today in a call, Skype call. And it was just so good to see his smiling face on the video, and just his whole approach was so upbeat. And he had spent some time developing himself from 15 years old to 30. And in any case, the thing I really noticed, and I mentioned to him, I said, it seems to me, I said, first of all, a lot of 30 or 40 year olds, I'm starting to attract that age for coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what is it about you guys? You know, what's happening? I said, because it seems like I'm being heard by you more than I am my peers that are, you know, 55 to 60. And we got talking a little bit, and the gist of it was is that it seems like the pendulum of conspicuous consumption is shifting. It seems like these 30s or 40-somethings are realizing, not that they're becoming, you know, anti-consumer society. It's just that there's more to life than just that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems much more tempered than where we were at 30. you know, during that Reagan era. You know, it seemed to me, and then the dot-com boom with Clinton, there was an awful lot of greed going. And it just seems that this group is we may be in a shift. And what Alex is talking about with gratitude may be a glimpse of that shift.
You know, speaking for someone in that 30-year-old generation, it's a very empowering moment for our generation. We're really being able to see that our choices affect a much greater population, and we have control over our own choices.
Right.
And so a lot of 30-year-olds plus are taking it upon themselves to do better stuff, whether it's for the community, for their environment, you know, whether it's getting into solar panels to save electricity, or whether it's growing their own food, or whether it's reducing carbon fibers through a vehicle choice. I mean, the shift is going, and it's, you know, it's really looking at all these different angles, and we're really seeing that we can have a greater impact, that we have power to choose, we have power to go and, you know, make movements to help legislation, and we can go ahead and speak up, and now with the social media, how can we use that to our advantage to bring in new ideas and things like that. So it's good to see, and like I said, with any shift, it takes time, but if you can look and see where it's happening, and then kind of focus in on that, and then, you know, corral a lot of others to say, no, you're not crazy, this is happening, you know, join in on it. And
well, you got that issue, like you say, everywhere you now, it's gratitudes and happiness is everywhere. You know, it's a hot topic, people searching happiness. And you also have both political parties talking about the income gap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when you got two parties on opposite ends of the spectrum, which basically disagree about most everything you can see, talking about the income gap in the middle class, you know, you've got some concern for and well-being for more than just a few.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure they're spouting that because they know that that's what is going to be a main issue, short of an international crisis.
They wouldn't be talking about it unless they thought it was a hot button. And
people have polled them; they got good statistics. So
absolutely,
it's obviously an issue that. You know, wages haven't gone up for the lower to middle class people, commensurate with the growth, and something has to change. So when you got both parties talking about that, and again, I don't hear them saying they want to shy away from work and they want a government handout. I don't hear that in my 30 to 40 something world. I'm hearing that they're willing to work, but it's not just their money. It's more of a stewardship approach towards their work. And
purposeful?
I think it. A lot of it has to do exactly what you said with the purpose, but that purpose has to be directed towards an overall society we want to live in, and we want to go ahead and leave for the future.
Exactly.
And I think we're finally getting to the point where we can start looking further down the road and say, you know what, we are often as a society are making choices for the here and now.
Right.
And this is another thing about taking on the responsibility. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to do with the show and the program and a lot of things we're talking about is that initial shift to where we're saying, you know, I'm going to start taking a little more personal responsibility.
Yeah, it's an individual shift. It's an individual shift that says it's my responsibility.
But when individuals, and that's the way these movements get started, is it starts with a lot of individuals shifting their own selves, and then coming together in a larger group, and that's how you build upon it, you know, just like rolling a snowball down the hill.
But if that shift is personal responsibility, and we do need income as individuals, we all have to work in a corporation, and again, that statistic, I look at big trends, 70% disengagement. We have to solve the engagement problem.
Well,
if people aren't engaged, that means that there's a big disconnect between management and employees.
Mm-hmm.
And that problem has to be resolved. And everybody's talking about it. They're eventually going to resolve it. They're going to say, how do we work together? You know, because the enterprise, the organization, whether we like it or not, is where we spend most of our hours. And if we're going to get along and we're going to and speaking of that, that's I want to let our listeners know that we're going to be retooling Admirable Friends in the radio show format here over the next few weeks, commensurate with our commercial side of the house, Strength Central, to end up with one radio show that can handle the nonprofit as well as the commercial side. But and that's because we think that this curriculum we're doing with Admirable Friends will indeed work in a corporate setting. And that's because people have to get along.
It transcends personal or business. I mean, it's just a common character, virtuous
Yeah, that notion endeavors. That, you know, my life is one way with business and one life with personal. That's not the way it really works.
Yeah, you're one person.
You're one person, and you've got to find a way to be whole, get along with your fellow man, contribute to an organization, to an enterprise. It's the top of the organization can't pull from the employees, and likewise, the employees can't pull from the organization and say, what's in it for me? What are my benefits? They've got to start contributing to that company as if it's their own. You know, it's the old goose that lays the golden egg. You got a goose there, and you all got to contribute to it, and you got plenty of gold coming out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, that goose in that analogy is the enterprise, and it has to be looked at that way in a stewardship approach. But anyways, it was a great call. I had a lot of good hope from talking to this 30-year-old as he's starting to talk about these trends like you were, Alex. I have a lot of hope for the future because, like I said, I think when you – there's a part of us, Carol, that look back at the younger ones, and it's not like we did it when we were young. So there's a part of us that could turn around and say, oh, they're all screwed up. They don't know what they're doing.
No.
You know, but when you step aside, what if they know more than we know?
Then it's very helpful and hopeful.
Right? What if they – I say know more than we know at that age, okay? Because we're now looking back from the mountain after we've lived a while, and we're saying, if I were to do it all over again, I would have done it this way. Well, you didn't do it that way.
No, you didn't.
I think we're, you know, another point to what we're noticing a lot, and it's something we've just been talking about since we've started this, this curriculum and this program, is stress. I think it comes to a boiling point when you have enough people recognizing that stress is a big topic in our society. There are a lot of contributing factors, of which ourselves are one of them, and the choices we make are contributing a lot of stress. And you know, when you talk about stress and its implications on your physical body and the medical implications that come from it, and the choices of food and where those can lead you along down the lines, you know, I think we're really starting to see a lot of this stuff, and it's throwing the hands up and saying, you know, let's face it, and let's find some ways
to deal about this. And I'm going to throw this up to our listeners before we break. If anyone has time to pull on this, to type into the chat line, or send us an email. But what I'm noticing, Alex, is yes, we're recognizing stress, some of us more than others, but the propensity, first of all, we got stressful because we ignored a lot of the warning signs. Would you guys agree that?
Yes.
That we're particularly under stress.
Yeah.
So the idea, and I know a lot of the mindfulness movement started at the chronic ill area where people were stressed out to heck because there was no medicine that could deal with the people that were chronically ill. And John Kabat-Zinn up there 35 years or some odd years ago at the University of Massachusetts started this mindfulness with people that had nowhere to go. So they were stressed out, and it's called mindfulness-based stress reduction. However, what I'm hearing, although a lot of this prescription that we have deals with stress reduction, that we so much still are American, getting back to your culture, that our drivers are not stress reduction. Our drivers are do things smarter and be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
As a society.
Correct.
I think we're more wisdom conscious than we are stress conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it comes to packaging in stress relief, we have to come at it from a wisdom angle, meaning people still want more. The Americans want their cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to find what I would call the bridge between the psychological side and the mindfulness side. So you have to find where people can get their cake and eat it too, and eventually spread through to get to an authentic experience. But they're still going to strive. That word strive is going to be part of our culture for a long time. You're going to get a few that are desperate or in lousy condition in their life where they're going to sit and go through the necessary training of meditation. It's a great indicator to it. But I'll tell you, this 30-something I'm talking about, when they see that meditation can help make them wiser, they're going to be open to those issues. They're going to be open to it because it's still, how do I get the gusto out of my life?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, like I said, it's a different gusto. It's like they want
it
all.
It's not in a selfish way.
It's not, yeah, it's not. What I'm hearing is, like Alex says, it's a stewardship thing. Mm-hmm. But they want to be wise. And they're not totally in tune with their stress, so the curriculum has to work through that as a way to back into wisdom. We already know that you work through stress to get to wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been at this for some time. And any of our listeners out there, if you think there's another way to wisdom, call in. But in my life and Carol's life, you back into wisdom for dealing with stress, okay? However, we still, you and I were not that stressful when we came to all of this. We were still searching for answers to wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's true.
So that's my thought on it. And anybody has any comments before we take a break here regarding that would be very, very helpful as we kind of retool our show and try to understand the drivers that get you to pick up the phone and engage with us. Let's take a moment.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Oh.
I got you laughing during the break.
You got me laughing. Carol says to me, you cut me off during the show. And she goes, next time you retooling the show, you'll be retooling it without me if you cut me off again.
And you thought that was funny, huh?
Yeah, I thought it was a riot.
Yeah, I knew you would.
Okay, look, I want to phrase a big question to you guys on discernment.
Okay.
All right? And I want
Well, do we need to give a definition of what discernment is, maybe, for the audience?
Oh, we just got done talking a lot about it. Yeah, but it's...
Well, let's go with the official.
Right, go with the official definition, Carol. Go for it.
No, go ahead. I don't have my glasses on.
The official definition is the ability to think past mere perception or aggregate of experience and evaluate it on a detailed basis, including making mistakes without personal guilt or remorse.
That's why it's in the wisdom category.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it.
Well, my favorite one.
And I think another thing I'd like to add to the, when you think of discernment, think of cause and effect. Right? Because when you look into detail, you're not just looking at the effect of something, you're looking at trying to chase its cause. Right? So cause and effect. If I do this, what's it going to do for me? If then else. Okay, the biggest question relating to our program and the biggest use of discernment relates to a strategic question, and that is, why should I discern and, well, let's discern between the outer and the inner world. When we say the word outer and inner world, a lot of times I get people nodding, but I sense that they don't really know the difference between the outer and the inner world. Mm-hmm. And I would like you two, for our listeners' audiences, to help discern and walk me through what you personally think the difference between an outer world, because these mind qualities are pushing us towards an inner world experience, and we keep saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make it really crystal clear. What is the difference between the outer and the inner world?
Oh, if you want something crystal clear, don't ask me.
Well,
you know, from your perspective, I want a crystal clear. Because of course you know what the difference is. I want.
I do know what the difference is.
Then give me a crack. What do you think the outer world and the inner world is?
God help. Take a crack, man.
Is that a dodge? Is that a dodge?
No.
Come on,
I just know we're on the same page, and I don't want to speak your thunder.
You're already thinking what I'm thinking.
Exactly.
Everything he said,
okay.
And a little bit of this. You know, apart from the obvious, one being outer and one being inner.
There you go. That's exactly what I was going to say.
We'll start with the gross form of it.
What's an outer world? What's an inner world?
You know, I think in the sequence of events, in my experience, in order to get
to that inner world of discerning, discerning kind of our inner feelings and intentions and kind of the role our mind plays in creating this world, both inner and outer. It's through the external that you can kind of backtrack into that internal. And so...
All right, what's that look like?
Well,
you wake up.
I feel like the outer world is that mirror, and it gives us the physical and physiological kind of eye we need to see things play out. And so, while we're having conversations internally with ourselves, we get caught in the conversation of what's going on up in our head. When we kind of flip our perspective to more of an external world and we're looking at things through there, we're really able to be given a glimpse of kind of our own actions in that space. So we're able to disconnect and see how we're acting and how our choices are being affected in the external. And when we see that and we realize, or when I see that and I realize that that's only a mere reflection of kind of the internal side, I can flip and kind of direct my questioning and direct my my ability to discern it, to drive deeper, more at where I think the root causes are, and that's from an internal perspective.
Because that's your internal world of thoughts, ideas, and emotions,
mm-hmm.
and your outer world will be what you're observing
mm-hmm.
Externally happening?
Right.
And is that about where you see it,
well,
Carol?
Yes, but additionally, I want to say that the outside world is also the fabrications that you feel that are being placed on you. Like, it's just the perceptions.
They're being placed on you?
Well, as you perceive them. It's sort of like...
Well, that would be the inner world, then, if it's what you perceive. Because if you're imagining...
Yes, yeah. So I should say that. It's like what you're fabricating from the outer world but transferring it to what your inner thoughts are. It's like you're allowing something out here to kind of hijack your intentions on the inside.
Right. So because the outer world of experience is typically experienced through our sense stores, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So we interpret everything that's going on in the outer world through our eyes, ears, nose, touch, right? And then the inner world plays a role in that. So let's break this down for our audience as simple as we can. Let's have a bowl of cereal. Let's walk us through the outer world and the inner world experience.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Carol. What happens with your bowl of cereal?
Well, I think outer world is like you could be thinking about what's going to happen, like when you get in the car and what you have to do at work, and before you know it, you're looking at the bottom of the bowl and you haven't even tasted the cereal.
Okay. So was that you were lost in the outer world, or were you lost in your inner world of thoughts and ideas outside of what you were eating?
Yes.
You were lost in your inner world.
Correct.
Okay, now talk me through another experience, Alice. You eat your bowl of cereal. What's going on? So in that case, Carol, you were deprived of the actual nutrition and eating it.
Or just the...
being aware of it.
Right. Or just being there for the bowl of cereal.
That happens a lot in my world.
Yeah.
A lot of other times...
That's a lot in everybody's world. You're not alone.
I know. A lot of other times I'm looking at how does this bowl of cereal play into the rest of what's going on today? Right? Is this cereal, what is this cereal doing for me nutritionally going into lunch? How's this thing going to make me feel going out the door? Am I making the right decision on, is it, you know, because I've made the mistake of having something too sugary and then being depleted later, you know, soon on. And so the decision making going into what am I going to need now for fuel to get me throughout the day?
Right.
Is somehow how I go ahead and I break down breakfast, and some of that's happening really quick. I don't make it seem like I'm sitting there with a pen and a pencil saying, well, if you carry the two and you add a waffle, you got yourself a full meal. No, this is these things are happening.
At light speed.
Yeah. And a lot of it's based on making mistakes prior, which is a big part of growing the faculty, in my opinion, of discernment, is you have to be willing to make mistakes
but make mistakes and don't judge them, so you can then go ahead and be in a position to kind of overcome them at a later time. So like I said with the cereal, maybe getting your stomach upset at one point, you've made that mistake enough, you know that that's something you don't want to do.
Well, because with the cause and effect, it's like making decisions, you know, that lead me down the road to a good result.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Exactly. Let me pose another scenario. You're at work, both of you, right? And your boss comes into a meeting, mm-hmm. and he or she is in a bad way, and you're taking part in the meeting, and you're describing what's going on, and he or she cuts you off and starts redirecting what you guys were constructively working on as a team. Now give me that experience from an outer and inner world.
From an outer and inner world.
Yeah. Well, the outer event is he walks in the room, right? And he's saying this. And what's going on in your inner world?
Well, I guess it all depends, like, where I'm at. If I've got control over my senses and my faculties, I'm thinking to myself, let this go you know, the discernment part would be if I'm skillfully doing it and I've got the wherewithal, I'm saying, this is not what we discussed. He's hijacked the meeting. I need to pull him aside afterwards, or she aside
this
afterwards.
This is what's going on in your inner world?
Pretty much. Okay. And then we're going to have to discuss it.
And then you look up and everybody was out of the room.
Now, the other one is I'm already planning my escape and my next job, saying I can't stand this. Okay. No, I don't know.
Alex, how do you see the interview?
This experience I've gone through, I think this is a better example to relate what I was getting to about the external and internal kind of working in tandem together. So there's an external event that's happening right now. You're perceiving it, you're seeing it, you're hearing it, you're feeling it. What's coming in, the same thing that you were talking about.
Well, your eyes see them coming in.
Your eyes see them coming in. Your ears are hearing them in. Your body is actually feeling them, because what he's doing in this situation is eliciting some internal dialogue and feelings immediately.
Well, that's why I created a situation.
So there are sensations, whether it's anxiety, whether it's anger, whether it's greed, whatever it is, bewilderment. These sensations are happening very subtly. And if you can recognize them, right, that flips you into...
No. See, now you've shifted from an inner world of receptivity.
Well, we were saying, the external is your observation, your gathering tool, right? The external is your opening, your keyhole to look through and gather the necessary data you need to kind of bring that dialogue back in. And so the dialogue internally now is made from a decision of gathering intel. Right. You're not just making an emotional snap judgment based on, you know, whatever first comes to that, you know, whatever crosses the line first.
By the way, I want to add one thing. This boss always does this.
That's what I'm saying. These things happen.
He or she always does this. So now how does that add to your internal world? Always does it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the decisions are making.
So the moment he walks in the door, internal world is already kicked in.
You're already
preconditioned to say, this guy's a jerk.
Well, let me just say.
He's going to take this meeting over.
Yeah, exactly. You're either... I've noticed that the preconceived notions about, while I've never met this person physically before, I've met others that have perhaps been in his position and have been in this room before and have seen them do similar things. So I see this guy walking in and I see his demeanor, and perhaps I already know where this is going. So I've already built up something in my head, and now I'm ready to snap as soon as I feel it come up. Just to what you were saying. So we have these things that are creeping up there. And if we don't give ourselves the space, which I believe discernment to be, is that extra space to say, hold up, let me just put
Well, discernment is built by training that space.
Correct.
Because you need to take inventory of what's going on.
Right, exactly.
First of all, you can make choices, but if you're making them based upon bad or erroneous data from your inner world of thoughts and ideas and biases, you're in big trouble.
You know, and we're kind of preconditioned that the faster, the more efficient, right? That's what we talked about earlier, American culture. The faster, more efficient we can process something, that's a better way of doing it. But actually, in the mind's role,
fast isn't always better.
That's where I think in our mind's role, actually, some space and allowing some time for the proper things to sit and marinate so we can make a better decision.
Yeah, but sometimes a person who hasn't made that shift, Alex, can be sitting with time. And here's what goes on. Okay, I'm going to give this guy some time. And everything he's saying, and I've got a preconceived notion that he's a jerk, mm-hmm. and everything he's saying is making me stew even more because I'm giving him time. I want to just illustrate for a second. It's not just the time. It's the shift, okay? And the shift is assuming you're – when you really shift to the inner world, you start assuming a role in the dance that you know that you're – how you're interpreting this.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, how am I feeling right now? This guy's making me feel stressed. I need to take a breath so I can hear everything and act from clarity, okay? So it's not, I need to take a breath because I hate the guy.
Right.
Right? You've assumed responsibility for you're not feeling good right now.
Uh-huh.
This has happened before. So I'm going to calm down and I'm going to chill down and I'm going to listen, right? And I want to try to let go of my bias because quite possibly there might be something here that's worth listening to. That's open judgment. You've now left the space. Now, that's a shift. That's not just a time issue. That's an awareness that says, I know I play a role in what I'm interpreting coming through this machine.
And that shift becomes more and more comfortable the more often you do it. And that's what I really think the crux of our practice is that we want people to shift as much as they can, as often as they can. So we're giving them practices and techniques to help.
And again, that shift is what? So our audience can hear this. Carol, your words. The shift is what? What is the shift to you? We use these words.
Well, when it comes to discernment, and I was just going to bring this up, it comes from making a judgmental call to a judicious call. Judgment meaning making a very fast knee-jerk reaction that doesn't take any thought. It's just...
But when the shift to responsibility, don't give me a definition. When you shift and you become a responsible party to a conversation, what happens in your world? What are you doing? What are you shifting? Just like if somebody's listening here on the radio, they want to say, Carol, what are you talking about?
What I do...
When you take responsibility, all right, for a situation that's uncomfortable, and I just outlined an uncomfortable situation, what did you do to shift? What is it, in your words, did you do to shift?
I gave it some space. I almost zoomed in. Like, you know how a camera just zooms? Like, goes zoop right there. Like, you watch a movie and all of a sudden you're going.
But were you first aware of it being a stressful condition?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. And that's your call to what?
To investigate further, to slow down and just kind of bring the reins in.
For yourself.
Because something's going to get out of hand.
So you try to open up non-judgmentally what's being coming through, what's being said. Get yourself in a position so you can hear and hear unfiltered data as best of your ability coming through
your
sensory
experience. Yeah, it's difficult, but as much
as
you can, sure.
Unfiltered. Now when you really walk through these specifics, you see how difficult it is. Excuse me?
See how difficult it is?
When you see how difficult it is to... understand and make that shift, because you're asking yourself to give up all biases of the way you might feel about somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you normally have a position going in, which basically means that your triggers and your patterns are going to be the same.
Well, this just doesn't happen like being struck by a bolt of lightning. I mean, there's got to be some sort of practice in order for you to cultivate the skill of discernment. You can't just create a space, just willing it to happen.
That's exactly right. And now by walking it through, I'm hoping the audience can understand that this doesn't just happen. The reason we continue to make the same mistakes in our choices, in our relationships, is because we haven't made that shift. We haven't made that shift to assume the responsibility that we're playing in the whole act. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like if you did this over and over again and you were watching it.
You know, that is a practice that I have put into my repertoire for years now. And so I just, going back to your point, this isn't like, hey, you wake up and all of a sudden you're using discernment. This comes from a long line of practicing. And when we talk about determinations and endurance and persistence, I mean, this stuff is all included in this. And so this is a long time coming where, you know, it started out, I can remember it started out with me, and this goes right to discernment. I challenged myself for a couple weeks that to really hone in, not anything else except for my role in the choices I was making. No matter how bad the choice had turned out, no matter what the effect was, I was going to focus and I was going to write down my role in it. So if I was writing a script, I'm only writing the script from the view of one person's role.
Right.
What's that? What does that look like? And I stayed in that stream, and I continued to stay in that stream. And what I began to notice was that the more I could identify my role in it, I was able to see things a little bit in advance and kind of pause and say, okay, let's, instead of looking in arrears and saying, what was your role in this? I was now seeing it ahead of time and saying, what will your role be?
Okay, but notice you're always saying your role in it. Now, most people, when they recount this story that I've laid out, okay, this story where this guy came in the office and did it, right?
Right.
You get home that night and you tell your spouse about the story. How does that storyline go?
Oh, it's usually...
Give me how it goes.
Well, it's usually I was in a meeting today and so-and-so came in and they did this and they did that. And
to you.
They did this to the group, right? They did this and that.
And so I want our audience to think about it. Next time you're telling your spouse at home, and you're talking about what happened to me today.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize the object is you, and you're describing that event as if it all happened to you. What you just described, Alex, was what you did based upon the event.
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be telling your spouse, I was here, I walked into the meeting, and you'd be real proud of me today because he came in like he normally comes in, and I took a breath, and I recognize that, you know, this guy gets my buttons going all the time, and I just realized that today I was going to give it the space, and I heard things that I never heard before, and then I made a choice here, and I avoided some stress because I was with it. So now you're talking about what you did in reaction to the external event,
mm-hmm.
because you better manage your inner world, versus coming home and telling the story as if it all happened to you.
Mm-hmm. And people are saying, well, that's a practice, but it started so long ago. And I really believe that's just how it starts. People want to say, well, how can I start something on this? Really, it just began with a bit of curiosity and trying something out and trying it out long enough to tell myself, yes, this is working, or no, find something else. And then I fell upon a practice which said, hey, why don't you look at your role in this and try that challenge?
Let's see your role.
Right?
That's
so it all started with some curiosity, being able to see things, being able to come in touch with, you know, whether it's stress, anxiety, or just this feeling of kind of, just kind of being out there that drew me in to want to look at something like that.
So you realize at some point, and see, I don't think this requires meditation.
Right. No,
like, this
well,
is
it's
just
funny
basic.
That you're saying this because I see him saying that he started it by writing and saying, what's my, you know, very clinical, what's my action, and let me just do this. I think I backed into it by starting a meditation practice first, feeling like I created space, and then I could see.
Then you took responsibility.
Yes.
I would agree with that.
There's two different paths here, and I think that worked for you, Carol, but I think there are some people with wisdom side, they can see this and say, that's a different way of looking at experience. I can start looking at the experience from the inner world versus the outer world. And I hear what you're saying, and that's worked very well for you, right?
Right. I feel it's worked for me. But like you say, it's not, you know, there's more than one way to create the space.
Now, I will say I did have a healthy meditation practice leading up into that sort of a shift in that perspective. So to say that that wasn't a part of it is something I wouldn't feel comfortable with. It played a role.
And maybe it's not that much of a sequence.
Right.
So maybe it was your desire to make it your responsibility that drew you to meditation.
Maybe.
But the bottom line, though, is...
But that's all I can remember is being the impetus between...
Sure. That's what I was saying. Maybe
so
that was
So that's why I'm saying this, though. That's where the shift was for me.
Yeah.
But we got to get close up to the show. Believe it or not, it's coming to an end. But one thing I want our audience to think about, when you hear yourself talking at the end of the night, and you're talking about what happened to you today, you never made that shift because nothing happened to you,
mm-hmm.
right? It's all your perception.
You happened to you.
So what you need to be doing is talking in a language of how you responded to what happened to you, because nobody wants to hear you talk about what happened to you. Because guess what? I had one of those days too.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. So the real responsibility comes in what choices did I make based upon what happened to me. That's the inner world and outer world shift. And that's the biggest discernment we could ask anyone to make, because that's the big why.
Yeah. I wanted to challenge myself. It was very easy to place blame and go ahead and point a finger at other people and say, how was this done to me? And I found that to be very easy. And I said, well, that's not challenging at all. And then I was challenged to go ahead and look at, see how you can find your own responsibility in these actions and in these roles. And that was a much tougher task. It was a tough task, to pill to swallow and to help yourself and to go forward. But the reward and the fruit on the other side
was
much greater, much more beautiful. And it actually linked up with my overall determination, living less stressful and living and putting less stress on other people. And that's all I ever wanted to do with my actions. And so it's accomplished.
We've got to close it short, but thanks both of you for being honest and talking about your shift and how you operate. Because I've watched you both. You don't come home saying what happened to me. You're always talking about the choices you made, and that's what discernment's all about: is making choices from an inner perspective. As what you call, Carol, a space. What you know, what other people call stability, from a position of stability. Make the shift. Take responsibility for your choices, and life will open up.
Sounds like a plan.
I like it.
Plan.
Onward.
Onward. Thanks, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Take care. Have a good week.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.